time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 177 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too, don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house in historic Bel Air, Maryland. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Today is some delicious breakfast blend.
And we got some flavored creamer. Are you ready to sip some of this delicious coffee and chat?
I am. But first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. They're here, new and improved Grubly's World Harvest.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats, plus orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein, perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
Grubly Farms makes food and treats for healthy pets and planet.
To support us and Grubly's, go to our website or our show notes and use the link. Try it today.
Chick season is here. And right now, you can try NatureWise Chick Starter Grower Feed and save $10. It's all the nutrition your chicks need in one feed. Click on the link in this week's show notes and get $10 off today.
Okay, so how are you doing today?
It's getting a little warm. I'm shearing animals before I planned to shear animals.
Okay, it's warm, but then you could just come to my house for an ice cold shower if you would like.
Because you have no hot water.
We've had no hot water for a few days. We've had somebody out. We have, you know, like a home warranty. So we need a new hot water heater.
Oh, jeez.
So they need to get the okay and then order it and then come back and put it in. So it's like iceberg dead ahead here. If you want to cool down, just get a shower at my house.
That would do it, yeah. But I'm not going to take you up on that because I do not enjoy a really freezing cold shower.
I'm coming to your house for like an hour shower.
You can. It's fine.
Don't do the laundry that day I get over there.
You know what today is?
What?
1 week ahead of our chicks.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Don't be telling me the stuff. I'm not ready yet.
I know, me either. That's why I'm telling you.
I need hot water, man. I can't think straight without hot water.
You're stuck on the hot water?
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, this is the part of spring where I start to lose my mind. Up until now, I've puttered around. I've planted some stuff. I've had a good time.
You've had floating lettuce.
Oh, yeah. That lettuce is still doing well, even though the bunnies keep coming and chewing it.
They're like, thank you for our lettuce. Thank you, ma'am. Yeah. We really love the lettuce.
But now stuff's getting real. I need to start shearing people. There are chicks coming. Yeah, it's breaking down fast.
Getting real, people.
Getting real.
And then I'll get some hot water and then it'll get really real.
By the time this drops, you will have hot water.
I better.
You're going to be showing up at my house at odd times.
I'll be like, Lord Jesus, I need some hot water.
Just give me a key because I'm coming in and using the shower.
Yeah, sorry, buddy. Don't use a dishwasher, which you don't have, so we're good there. Right. Don't do some laundry. Just give me all the hot water you got.
I'll tell you, when our hot water heater went up, and that is a Maryland thing, when your appliance goes up.
Oh, yeah.
Pete said to the home guys, I want a hot water heater that's big enough that we can wash the dishes and we can each take a shower without running out of hot water.
Yeah.
And they said, sure thing. This is what you need. They had it in 2 days later. We were golden.
I mean, we have a super extra large hot water heater.
That's what ours is now.
So, yeah. It's like we're not used to going without hot water, but it does something to your brain when you're getting washing your hair, your very long hair with ice cold water. It's not fun.
You'd be better off sitting a bucket in the sun to warm up and washing your hair in that.
I mean, like, look, I need to have a fireplace going, put a tub in front of there.
Yeah.
Get some warm water with the fire going. And I'm really missing it if you can't tell.
The chickens might enjoy it if you washed your hair outside.
Let's get that bucket out. Get the kettle going. Neighbors would be like, what the heck's going on at the DeCarlo's house? Like, oh, their hot water heater's broken. Don't worry.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show. Believe it or not, we love reading all your kind words. It does make our day. And bring a smile to our face and make us happy. Now, if you listen to us on Spotify, go ahead and hit that 5-star too, because all the reviews and the ratings help us grow. And the other thing is, subscribe. They count them.
The vague they.
The they people.
If you're looking for other ways to help the show, you can tell some chicken-loving friends about us. You can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can visit our Etsy shop. We got mugs and t-shirts up right now. You can become a patron of the show, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. And the other thing you can do to help support the show is visit our website and our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah?
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the February box, I absolutely love the spray bottle of Bye Bye Boo Boos and the Rooster Cheese Spreader Knife.
I love the Chicken Lady Era hat and tea. They're great, and you can't go wrong with that coffee with the Chicken Lady's mug.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock. Request a free catalog today. Oh yeah, it's time for the Breed Spotlight, yeah.
Yeah. It was just a little generic.
It was.
I mean, I'm okay with that.
They all can't be, you know, Grammy winners.
Masterpiece. Compositional masterpiece.
If I had hot water, maybe I would have thought of something better.
Is that what it is?
Okay. The lack of hot water, okay. Man. I would have been like, oh, here we go. Bring me some hot water. I need hot water. Now it's time for the Breed Spotlight. Yeah.
Which has zero to do with this chicken.
Exactly. But I need hot water.
Okay.
Okay. So this week's Breed Spotlight is
the Japanese Bantam.
They're little and they're cute. And they've got a big tail.
The beautiful little Japanese Bantam is a true Bantam with no large counterpart. No one knows for sure exactly how long this breed has been present in Japan, but paintings and Japanese artwork have documented them as far back as the 1600s.
They go far back, man.
They were probably present in Japan earlier than this, however. In their home country, they are referred to as chabo. They have an unusual appearance, like you were saying. They have a large head. They have short legs.
And a big old tail.
And the tail fans out and leans forward, like towards the back of their head.
It makes them super cute. And the boys are cuter than the girls, I feel like.
Sometimes that tail is called a squirrel tail. And I agree with you, the roosters are very flashy.
Oh, yeah.
There used to be an account. He has since passed on, unfortunately. Teapot Chicken, right. Mm-hmm. He was a really popular Instagram account. He was a black-tailed white Japanese Bantam.
So cute.
So stinking cute. My God.
He was a house chicken.
Very much so.
And a lot of times, these chickens, especially the boys, could be house chickens.
Most definitely. Roosters make amazing house chickens anyway, but you have a little cutie like this. The Japanese Bantams are quite distinct among the Bantam class and chickens in general, for all the things we just said. They are a heritage breed, and they are currently found in the threatened category of the Livestock Conservancy's Conservation Priority List. You might think that they are sort of new to the U.S., but they're not. Japanese Bantams did appear in the first printing of the Standard of Perfection in 1874.
They go way back, man.
They do.
All that cuteness.
They are definitely a chicken that you look at and you're like, that is a stinking cute chicken right there.
Oh, yeah. There's you're like...
The and, tail, everything.
And when you see videos of them running, it's even funnier.
It's so cute. Various poultry scholars believe that they originally came from an area that used to be referred to as South China, but we know better as the areas of Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam. This is not a surprise since so many breeds originated in this area. This is just a little aside, but I was recently visiting my ENT doctor.
Oh, yeah, your voice is sounding better.
It's getting there.
Oh, but side note, your voice is sounding better.
The reason I brought this up, though, is because the last time I was there, Dr. Best always chats to me about birds. He's a serious bird watcher.
Okay.
And he said, you know, the chickens, they came from the red jungle fowl. I've seen them. He said, I travel all over the world to do my birding. I said, where did you go to see red jungle fowl? He went to Thailand.
Oh, nice.
Apparently, they are stunning in person. I'm sure they are. Anyway, so Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam. At some point, the ancestors of this bird made their way to Japan, where they were refined into the fancy little chickens that we see today.
I mean, they're fancy.
They are ridiculous. And this makes perfect sense. They were most likely the pets of wealthy and high-ranking people who could afford to keep bantams for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
They are known to have very friendly personalities, and some say they are gentle on gardens because of their short legs and small feet.
They're another, like the Scots Dumpy with the short legs.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, they're just cute, though. I mean, the body looks bigger than it is because the legs are so short.
I think the big head and the comb and wattles kind of adds to the whole appearance.
They're a little tiny bird, but when you have like that proportion going,
right.
They look bigger. You
right,
know, they're
right.
Like, wow.
So, like we said, probably wealthy people keeping these birds. And it probably wasn't all that different for the Chabos when they arrived in the U.S. and the U.K.
We know this from bantams way
right.
back. I mean, it was the wealthier people that kept the bantams.
They're not the most practical birds in
They're
a lot of ways.
They're not a practical bird at all.
So it was probably in the mid-1800s that they started showing up, and they were most likely kept as pets and or showbirds.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken shows were becoming popular by the mid-1800s, so they were seen as an ideal breed for the ladies who fancied poultry.
Of course.
We've hinted about this a little. We've seen this here and there, people saying it was not genteel for ladies to deal with big breeds. They should stick with the bantams.
Well, we've proved them all wrong.
Lewis Wright went so far as to recommend them highly to the ladies.
Of course Lewis did.
And then Queen Victoria came along with her Cochin Chinas and her giant birds. And they couldn't argue if the queen was doing it, right?
Right, exactly.
Lewis Wright also notes that much of the work that went into the breed in the UK was courtesy of Miss Ricketts.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I could not find any information about Miss Ricketts. I don't even know her first name.
We just know there's a Miss Ricketts.
She's Miss Ricketts.
Hey, does anybody out there know anything about Japanese bantams and Miss Ricketts?
Right.
Let us know.
Obviously, that would have been in the UK, but she did some really amazing breeding with them. So
let us know if you're in the UK and you know something about Miss Ricketts.
I mean, I feel like if she was Mr. Green who lived in the cottage around the corner, Lewis would have had him write a letter, but not Miss Ricketts.
Come on, Lewis, you're slipping here.
I would not be surprised if the Japanese bantams were caught up in hen fever, given how fancy they are.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Both Wright and Tegetmeyer mention a small group of frizzled Japanese bantams that showed up on the show circuit for a number of years.
You got me a frizzled.
They eventually disappeared from view, but you can find some of them now. It takes some searching, but I did find some.
You add a frizzle to a Japanese bantam. Woohoo!
Off the fancy chart.
That's off the fancy chart.
That's also not a bird that can really stay out in cold weather at all.
No, that's a house chicken. That's a purse chicken, which I like to call in my Gucci.
Your Gucci chicken. Now, we talked about this before. You just alluded to it, especially when we spotlighted the Scots Dumpies and the Araucana.
They got shorter legs.
And that is linked to the semi-lethal creeper gene.
Could they name it something else besides creeper gene?
Well, you remember it, don't you?
Creeping around. The small legs are creeping in.
The creeper gene.
Look up the window. The creeper is looking down.
There's no way a bird could get up to that window if that had short legs.
Our one window in our studio.
Our one window, which is like 10 feet off the ground. The creeper gene gives the birds short legs, but it can also cause in-shell chick death.
Oh.
If you breed two short-legged birds.
Sorry.
I know you laugh every time I say the short-legged birds. If you breed two short-legged birds together, 50% will have short legs. 25% will have long or normal legs, and 25% of the offspring will manifest that lethal gene, and they will die in the shell.
Boo hiss.
I know. Now, you can breed two long-legged birds, and you will get only long-legged chicks and none of the death, but you can't show these birds.
Because, I mean, okay, can you imagine a Japanese bantam with long legs?
I think they'd be really cute, too.
It would just be looking so different. Like, what the heck? It always, whenever we talk about short birds, it reminds me of the Carol Burnett show growing up. Short people ain't got no legs. Do you remember that? And they had them with the short legs. And my brother and I used to always stand by the door and sing it for my parents. Short people ain't got no legs. Short chickens ain't got no legs.
Oh, my God.
We could change it up for them.
Well, the breed standard does call for short legs. So if you want long-legged Japanese bantams, are they really still Japanese bantams?
No. They're long-legged, I don't know, something.
For more in-depth information about that creeper gene, listen to episode 69, where we previously spotlighted the Japanese bantam, because we got really technical in it there.
We did.
We really got into it. So,
I mean, they're really, really charismatic little birds.
They are.
I mean, they're going to steal your heart. That tail is going to get you. It's very unusual. And they have the short people ain't got no legs, short yellow legs, and a head that's slightly larger than most bantams.
Yes.
I mean, it's
a recipe for ridiculous cuteness.
It is. Big size straight combs, red earlobes, and wings that droop to the ground. And they got the big curious eyes. How can you go wrong?
They're really alert. They like to see what's going on.
Now,
they're cute.
They're super cute. You watch them running with the short legs. That could be cute too.
Too funny.
Definitely. But they're pretty small.
True bantams usually are.
They're pretty small. So the roosters are averaging 1 pound, 10 ounces.
That's like Nankin size.
That's tiny. That's under 2 pounds. Yep. And the hens are coming in at 1 pound, 6 ounces. That is crazy tiny.
Yeah, that's really small. Now, again, Nankin size.
Yeah, Gucci size.
Definitely purse chicken size. Like, yes.
It's going to be a new way of measuring the bantams. Are they Gucci size? Yes or no?
Oh,
let's
my God.
See. And, you know, this could definitely be a chicken that I would see in a bantam flock of mine. Definitely.
Oh, me too. I've wanted them for years. I love them.
So let's go into the color varieties that they come into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Black.
White.
Black-tailed white.
Black-tailed buff.
Barred.
Wheaton.
Gray.
Brown-red.
And mottled.
Oh, and the mottled. Oh, the mottled.
We all know how I feel about mottled. We both feel very strongly about mottled chickens.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know the other one of these birds that's stunning? It's the gray bird. So they're a dark gray, like kind of almost the birchin color.
Okay.
And then they have laced head and neck feathers. They're absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, the black-tailed white was the first recognized variety.
That's the black-tailed white is the one that was in the Standard of Perfection in 1874.
Followed by the white in 1883. And then the rest of the colors kind of trickled in throughout the rest of the 20th century.
The barred Japanese bantam, I think, was very recent, like within the past 20 years, I think.
I mean, if you have a body structure that cute, you're going to be like, how many colors can we make this in? Because,
well, in the UK and Europe, there are more colors available. And I didn't check this because I don't have that Standard of Perfection, but I would imagine the American Bantam Society probably accepts more colors than the APA does.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, the hens, as you would know, if you have a bantam, are going to be really good broody moms.
Yep.
Because bantams, except for the Seabrights, are known to be really broody,
right.
Good broody moms.
Yes.
Okay. Now, they're reasonably good layers for bantams.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. So bantams do go broody. They lay less eggs. But this breed, they're going to give you 100 to 150 small cream-colored eggs each year. I notice a lot of bantams lay like the cream-colored eggs.
Well, the reason for that is because their oviduct is so short that they don't have enough time and space to put a brown bloom on it.
Well, think about like that being so short. I think about it as a car wash when you go through. And it sprays all the stuff on your car, like the wax. It's all different colors.
Okay,
that's happening inside the chicken.
That's what's happening in your head. Okay.
No, well, that's what's happening inside the chicken.
In your head.
As the egg comes through.
Yes.
But it's not long enough to put all the rainbow colors on.
It's true. Yeah.
So there you go.
So they may, like, obviously a bird that's a white egg layer is not going to lay brown eggs. But if
right.
you get some of that cream, that can be why.
That's what she said.
But this is a very fancy, very friendly little bird. They are not at all cold hardy. I mean, not even a little bit. They will absolutely require supplemental heat if your temperatures are near or below freezing.
They're tiny. They have big combs and wattles. You know, come on.
The big combs and wattles need to be safeguarded from frostbite.
So they're great for warmer climates. Like most bantams are better in heat.
Yeah.
So they're small body chickens that do well. That big comb and wattles is going to help regulate their body temperature a little bit. But here's the thing. They can fly because they're
they can fly.
Take so you that need in. An aviary.
Yeah. When you're building coops and runs, maybe consider a roof or a cover. I pretty much go – all my runs now are the aviary style.
Everything. And you have to always check. Like I always am checking mine for little spots.
Right.
You know.
Weak spots. Places
exactly.
where wire may have rusted.
You have to go through and constantly check that. And yeah, we do that for our birds.
Yeah.
We only supervise free range because these little birds free ranging on their own are sitting targets.
Absolutely.
For anybody.
Yeah, they really are.
So they make great pets, great show birds, great 4-H projects for your children.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to and they're Gucci, great. They fancy make, lady, Gucci chicken.
Great addition to the fancy chicky lady's flock.
The Gucci chickens. That should be a breed. Like that should be like a breed category. Gucci chickens.
It could be, I suppose.
It really could be.
But what if you don't carry Gucci? What if you carry a custom Baltimore Wool Company original?
The Baltimore Wool Gucci.
I do a lot of things, but I do not do Gucci knockoffs.
No, I need the Gucci. Oh, you need the Gucci. Come on.
You could name your boy
Guccia.
Guccia. Guccia.
Guccio.
This bird, here's one of the downsides. They can be a real challenge to breed. They need conservation breeding, but they can be a real challenge to breed due to some low fertility issues.
And that creeper gene.
Sometimes the chicks can be fragile. That doesn't even take into account the creeper gene. Sometimes the chicks can just be fragile.
I mean, yeah, like little tiny chicks like this, they definitely are. There are certain breeds that are going to be tougher to breed. This is going to be one of them.
Right, right. They are a great option for small space chicken keepers.
And they're a lot of people that keep them as house chickens.
Yeah. They are docile birds, but they do like to be busy doing chicken things. I mean, they are active and alert.
Right.
I'm not sure whether I believe they do less damage in a garden or not. I've never seen a chicken that couldn't scratch up a garden in record time.
Oh my God, they can do it big time.
People used to say that about the Cochins and the Brahmas. And I'm like, my Cochins will be out there with vegetation flying behind them.
Yeah. Oh,
they're scratching so much.
Okay. So here's the big question that everybody is in their head. Where can I find them?
McMurray Hatchery carries 4 or 5 colors of Japanese bantams. Now, this little detail I like. McMurray doesn't cull the 25% of chicks that are born with regular long legs. They are sold as pets along with the rest of their hatch. Obviously, they cannot be shown.
But they're pets.
But they're not. They don't cull them.
That's because, you know, that's another reason why we love our McMurray Hatchery.
Most places are going to sell Japanese bantams as straight run or unsexed. There is a Japanese Bantam Breeders Association group on Facebook. They might have some other options for breeders and just more information on the breed itself. So they're a great resource.
So if you have the Japanese Bantam, please, please send us some pictures or videos. When you send it on Instagram, hit that mention button and then put our name in because then I can reshare. To just tag us, I can't reshare those stories. So you have to hit mention and then put us in and I will reshare all your stories.
If you were going to get Japanese bantams, what color varieties would you want?
All the chickens.
All the chickens. All of them. I want them all.
All of them. Hey, hey, chicken loving friends. Know why springtime is a super special fun time? Because it's chick season and NatureWise wants to help you start your chicks off healthy and strong. So right now you can try NatureWise Chick Starter Grower Feed and save $10. It's all the nutrition your little babies need in one feed. Click the link in our show notes to get $10 off from NatureWise today.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. They're back with an innovative new product. You're going to want to check this out.
It's an extra large set, a 14-pound feeder in 3-gallon water with steep anti-roost lids. They're made of super durable material. You can either stand them on legs or hang them on brackets on your coop or fence. They're easy to remove and clean, too. Plus, they look awesome.
We personally use Roosties, and we're huge fans. So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, check out the Roostie store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes.
UK chicken lovers, this one's for you. Get happy, healthy hens with EcoNourish's live calcium worms. Enrichment, nutrition, and protection in one tasty, sustainable pack. Scientifically proven to support glossy feathers, strong laying and skeletal health,
protect from disease and improve gut health and immunity. You'll also bust flock stress by stimulating natural instincts and get eco bragging rights. Visit econourish.co.uk and use the code COFFEE15 for 15% off your first order. Your chickens and the planet will hug you for it. Okay, so are we ready for main topic? Yeah. It's about that time that we go across the pond and have coffee with Fiona. Yeah. Okay, so we're super excited to have Fiona back this month because our dear friend had an injury, had a broken leg, and she is back stronger than ever. She's still recuperating, but welcome Fiona back to the table.
Stronger than ever, but still with a broken leg. So it's not all that good. Yeah, but I'm like the bionic woman now because I've got internal scaffolding going on, which is awesome.
Bionic woman? Do you make that noise every time you move?
Well, now I don't have any much movement. That's the problem.
You'll never go through airline security the same way again.
I'll never go through airline security without setting it off now because there are two rods, four plates, and numerous screws in there, apparently.
You're like a cyborg, but you're not...
Yeah, but do you know the most upsetting thing for me is it's not that my left leg is now going to constantly be bigger than the right leg. So I'm going to have a chunky left ankle.
Hey,
I'm a girl with a chunky left ankle.
It's going to build character. It's going to build character.
At least you'll be able to walk on it. The chickens won't care.
The chickens do not at all.
They love you all the same. We love you too. We're very, very, very happy to see you looking so good.
You look fantabulous. And you know why?
Because I put some makeup on today. I did it especially for you.
You look awesome.
You do look awesome.
Okay. How are things going besides the leg? How's everything else going? How's Hugh?
We have our first broody. Oh, he's doing amazingly well. It's quite funny actually, because on our socials on Instagram, everyone's saying, oh, the chickens have taken to Hugh and they really love him. Now, Hugh was always looking after the chickens behind the scenes. He just didn't like doing it on camera.
Yeah.
So it's just I've got him on film now being followed by all the chickens. It's just nobody saw it before. He looks like the Pied Piper, honestly, with them following and trailing him through the orchard.
Who's your first broody? Which hen is
Puffin? Puffin.
It's Puffin. Okay. So you have a video up on Instagram of Hugh delivering mash to Puffin, and it's the cutest thing ever. I just loved it so much.
But he always does that.
Room service?
Yeah, he does. He thinks it's, you know, he does these funny little things, and he's just such a star with them. He really is.
The first video he put up of him feeding them, sitting on the chair, was so cute.
Yes.
I've got loads of them. I'm kind of drip feeding them every time. So I've got loads of those videos because everyone thought it was just me, the chickens did it with, but no, they do it to him the whole time as well.
I'll keep it coming.
Because you've got to remember, he's looked after them from baby chicks as well from day one.
Yeah.
And he's had a bit of a trauma tonight because Egret, one of the other buff orphan terns, was showing broody tendencies. We were convinced she was broody. So we did our normal things. We try and get them settled into a brood suite first night. So he lifted her up, put her in the brood suite and closed the door. So this was about half an hour before roosting. She went ballistic. As soon as she was out of where she was trying to brood and into the other coop, she went crazy. So we always have little coop cams in. So he immediately rushed out. He didn't do the kind of male thing of, no, we'll just leave her in there and see how she does overnight. And, none of that. It was, oh, no, no, I'm letting her out. That was it. So he's just amazing. Couldn't ask for any better. But yeah, he's as involved as I am with the chickens. He just doesn't put his obsession up on Instagram like I do.
Okay, so today's roundtable, both Fiona and ourselves, we participated in the Backyard Chicken Summit. We both talked about different things, but today we're going to talk about kind of what Fiona talked about at the Chicken Summit.
Fiona's
we're going to talk about incubating eggs and some of the do's and don'ts, because we're at that time of the year where everybody kind of wants chicks.
Right. Right.
So Fiona has a lot of good information to share.
Yeah, I mean, we generally use broody hens as our primary incubation method, and we use incubators as a backup, but most people use incubators. So, and I've had a lot of questions after the Backyard Summit about incubators, choosing them, what to go for, what to look for. And it's really surprised me how many people have bought cheap. And that is, I have to admit, I did it myself for the very first time because we use broody hens as our main incubation method. We thought we'll buy a backup to support the broody hens, and we bought a cheap eBay Chinese import. Worst decision ever of my entire life. And do you know what? I've actually heard in the last week, and if I didn't know this individual person, I would think it's quite funny. But their incubator actually went up in flames and caused a significant amount of damage to the house. And it was one of these cheap ones from China, unfortunately. So, and I'm not saying that's going to happen with every incubator that you buy, but it does actually show the perils of what can happen if you don't buy quality.
So let's start with, what are some of the things that somebody should look for when they're getting ready to purchase an incubator? What are some of the standards, some of the good functions that somebody really wants to have on their
incubator? There's three main things that you need to look for in the programming, and there are three levels. So there's turning, there's temperature control, and there's humidity control. And you can get fully automatic. They're all singing, all dancing, practically make your cup of tea incubators, which are amazing, where basically you just program them and walk away, and now and again you just check to see how the eggs are developing. And those will control all of the temperature for you. They will turn the eggs at, you need a very good deep angle. And this is one of the problems with the cheap imports. You will have a very shallow angle at 45 degrees. That's it. And that actually will leave you in danger of the developing chick on the inside adhering to the internal membrane. And that means that they're not going to be able to turn themselves around, which means they won't hatch. They will die during the hatching process. So that's one of the biggest reasons not to buy cheap. Go for quality. You need a turning angle of a minimum of 90 degrees, preferably 125, 135 if you can get it.
Because your broody hen is going to be turning her eggs every day.
And
if you're hatching with an incubator, you have to find a way to mimic what she's doing.
Yeah, and the broody hen, as a minimum, will be turning them 180 degrees. So, you know, they will do a full turn on them the whole time. And there's many, many incubators out there that will actually do that. Here in the UK, the market leader is a brand called Brinzey, and these are the only incubators we have now. And we've got a number of them, and all of their incubators, they have some which mimic the turning that a broody hen will do. And those are like, they're circular in shape. So they have discs on the inside and kind of roll the eggs. But when you go to the larger sizes, they have a version called the Ovation, which essentially your egg is in a cradle. But even then, the turning angle is very, very deep. It's a very, very good turning angle. And that is more reliable as well than the disc ones which turn them. So I like both for different reasons. So I think if you've got young kids, go for the dome ones, because actually your kids get a better view of what's going on during hatch day. And kids love watching hatching. But if you want a reliable hatch, go for the ones with the cradles, which rock from side to side, but make sure it's a very deep angle. Then you've got your temperature control. Now, the one thing with temperature is that even the best incubators can't control the temperature if you place it incorrectly in the wrong room.
Yep.
So you need it in a room which is normal daylight and normal temperature, so you don't have extremes. So if you're heating with wood and you only like the wood burn in the evening, that's not good, because you're going to have a cold room during the day and very hot at night. That's not great for an incubator. And don't put it in direct sunlight either. Yeah. Because it acts like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
If you think, if you're in a greenhouse during the day, and even on a winter's day when it's cold outside, the inside of that greenhouse gets hot. The same things will happen in an incubator, and temperature control can only do so much. But for me, the game changer was humidity control. I never saw the very first Brinzey incubators we bought, we didn't have humidity control. We went for the one below. So it had really good temperature control and really good turning. Mm-hmm. But we didn't pay the extra for humidity control. And then we did. And I'm never looking back. I'm never buying the lower versions ever, ever again.
I will say that and I knew I was going to buy Brinzey because I wanted really good quality. And I remember saying to you, should I go for the automatic humidity pump and monitor? And you said, yes.
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 Didn't even have to think about it, did I? I mean, it's the fact you can just put that little jar or little bottle beside your incubator, put the pipe in it, and then you don't have to worry about it. It automatically does everything for you. It's such a relief.
It was so easy to set up. I do have one of the round dome ones.
Because you're like a kid and you want to watch them.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If you want to watch them hatch, the Maxi 24 is perfect. You get a much better view.
You have a great view. It worked really, really well. Like you mentioned, you can actually program the angle of turn that you want in there.
Yeah.
You can also program, and I love this, and I knew about this simply from talking to you about broody hens. The broody hen gets off of her nest at least once a day to go out and do her business, et cetera, et cetera. So the eggs have this natural cool down. Well, that's programmed into the Brinzy. I love that.
I know. And we make use of that cooling down period just because of that, because we see the benefit of it with the broody hens. And people are afraid of it sometimes. But,
oh, it's good.
You know, if you've used broody hens, you know what it's like. And actually, it gives you a little bit of comfort because you're treating the eggs in a very natural way.
Yes.
But can I tell you about what's just, by the time this episode is out, there's going to be a new Brinzy on the market.
Tell us.
You can spy on it with an app on your smartphone. It's amazing.
You can watch what's happening in the incubator on an app on your phone.
You can monitor.
It worked for a long time.
Yeah.
You can monitor exactly what's happening with the incubator from your phone. So you can, it will tell you what the temperature is at the time, how many times it turned it. You can check on the humidity. It will give you an alarm and a notification if there's something wrong. So you can control it. If you want to change the cool down period, if you want to change the humidity levels, you can do it all from the app.
And wow.
That has been in the works for a while over at Brinzy. I remember years ago we talked to the people over at Brinzy and they were telling us that was in the works. So
yeah, it's finally coming.
It's finally coming. Wow. It's taken a little bit of time, but that's exciting stuff.
So what does the rest of the incubator look like?
It's actually, they're doing it in the Ovation 56 size.
Okay.
So it's the largest Ovation model, which actually I really like because we normally only put a maximum of 28 eggs in it, which sounds counterintuitive, but when you get to hatch day, it means that those little chicks have got plenty of room to run around while other eggs are trying to hatch. And, you know, it just feels nicer. To be honest, it works really well for us. So they're only doing that size and they're doing a limited release to begin with. So 100 to the US and 100 to the UK. So Ooh. If you want them, you got to buy them fast.
You got it. They're going to be sold like hotcakes. They're going to be out of there.
And I can't tell you. I'm so excited. I can't wait.
If everyone can see your face right now, you're like a kid on Christmas morning.
I'm like a little toddler because it's going to be a game changer for me. And the reason it's going to be a game changer is because I've got a broken leg. And where we put our incubators is in one of the bedrooms upstairs. And I can't get upstairs. I'm living downstairs because I can't cope with steps. So I'm going to be able to monitor that everything's okay in that incubator. I'm going to be able to see what's going on with the temperature, humidity, with the turning, with the cool down period.
Does it have a camera too? Can you actually?
No. Okay. You can't actually physically see but I've got a little indoor stick up ring camera.
Oh,
see, you are the pro, Fiona.
You have made this work.
Oh, yeah. And I've got Ring have actually joined her Coop cams for this year. So if you watch the things we're putting out on Puffin at the moment, they're actually from the Ring cameras because the Wi-Fi is so good and her Coop is so far from the house. It's the only Coop cam that can actually pick up on the Wi-Fi signal. So we get the best reception. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool. I'm not sponsored in any way, by the way. I just, you know, it's just really useful.
So let's bring up some of the points that you were talking to me about, some of the things that you don't want in an incubator. You were, you know,
What to avoid.
Yeah, don't buy cheap. Look for quality of unit. Look for the turning angle. So if they don't tell you what the turning angle is in their listing, don't buy it. Go to their downloadable manuals and try and actually work out what it is and ask the seller what the turning angle is. And you want a minimum of 90 degrees. If it's ideally, you want more, but unless it's 90 degrees, don't buy it. Find how you program humidity because the horror story I'm going to tell you about humidity is when we got our first very cheap Chinese import, we got it in and it said, we control humidity. And I thought, great, wonderful. Tell us what the relative humidity is in the room that you're putting your incubator in. And I thought, how on earth do I work that out? I've got no idea. You know, I don't have an interest in meteorology. I don't know how to measure that. I do have a neighbor who can probably tell me, but who knows that stuff? I mean, Pete. But Pete's wonderful. Pete's got a massive amount of interest.
Is there an app to tell you the humidity in the room? There's got to be. It would have to be.
You'd have to have
something to actually record the humidity to begin
to
with.
To pull the moisture, see how much moisture is in the air.
Yeah,
and I didn't have anything like that. So
if you don't have that, there's no way you can accurately program the incubator at all.
Yeah, so I was basically programming humidity completely blindly and just hoping it would work out.
But, oh, boy.
You know, I think it's worth checking on those things. And the other thing is cleanliness. Just have a look at how you can clean these things and what they recommend.
Yes.
Because I'm going back to Brinzy again, but they actually have their units that's impregnated with something which prevents bacterial growth. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have to clean it, because you absolutely do. And this is where a lot of incubator owners get it wrong. You absolutely must clean down after every hatch, because all sorts could grow in there and it will impact your eggs next time around.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Pathogens are pathogens. You know,
oh, yeah.
You just had eggs hatch. So there's all kinds of stuff.
And there's lots of specialist cleaners out there for incubators. So they're not difficult to get hold of. And they're actually not expensive either. No. And just a quick strip down of the unit, clean it down. It makes all the difference. And the other thing is, be prepared after the hatch. Please, 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 please don't buy the incubator on its own. You have to have a means of keeping your chicks warm after they come out of the hatch process. So my personal recommendation, I love brooder plates. And I know you love brooder plates too.
Oh, yeah.
I've never used a heat lamp because I'm afraid of heat lamps, because I've heard of so many horror stories of fires and, you know, fire hazards with them. And the brooder plates, I have felt safe enough actually with the old chick who hasn't been raised by broody hen to install a brooder plate in the coop and let the chickens experience outside, but come back into the coop and have a brooder plate to heat them up as well. And it works so well. I've never had any safety concerns. They've always been well looked after under a brooder plate.
I will say that if you're going to do that in the US, you need to make sure the temperatures are higher. Do not do that when it's...
Have them in the house.
Oh, yeah. Because we have temperate climate control over here. It's a completely different environment. But I wouldn't be hatching chicks when the nighttime temperatures are below zero, ever. And even then, I absolutely wouldn't be putting any chicks outside, even with a brooder plate, inside the coop, unless the nighttime temperatures were consistently above 10 degrees Celsius.
Let me check that real quick.
I'm talking Celsius.
That's right. I'm going to check it.
Yeah.
That's 50 degrees here. Yeah.
Right. But that's nighttime temperatures. Right. So daytime is going to be 18, 19, 20.
A lot of people are going to be incubating around this time, and it's still cold.
I would absolutely not have them outside. They would have to be inside at this time of year.
Exactly. Yeah. So the brooder plate in the house, in a laundry room or someplace like that, would be perfect to have them to come out of the incubator. The other thing is, you must leave them in the incubator, correct, until they dry. They have to dry in the incubator.
Absolutely.
So don't bring them out too quickly.
And the thing is, it's very, very tempting when the first chicks come out of the egg to start picking them out and putting them under the brooder plate once they fluff up. The worst thing you can do is do that. The very first time we will ever do that is 36 hours after the first chick has hatched, because that's the point at which the yolk that they will have absorbed will start to run out and they actually need to start having access to food and water. And yes, you may have some eggs still trying to hatch at that point, but I'll actually just make sure that there's plenty of humidity once the lid is closed. But I will not lift the lid until at least 36 hours after the first chick has hatched out the egg.
You really risk dropping the humidity so quickly that the chicks get shrink wrapped in the egg.
Right.
So
it's absolutely. The other ones can't get out.
Yeah. That's, it is a no-no. Even if your kid wants to hold the fluffy chick, Don't do it from the hatch.
No,
absolutely
not. That's a very good point.
I've been trying to get a chick out of an egg when it's actually adhered to the internal membrane. It's dried out. It's such a delicate procedure, and you can very, very easily, I mean, this is going to sound awful, but you can so easily tear the skin off if you get it wrong.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So it's, if you can avoid that happening in any way, shape or form, please, 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 please do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very good point.
Did I say that strongly enough? Please don't lift the lid until 36 hours after the first chick has hatched.
Yep. If everyone's complete and you're ready to go, fine. Take the lid off, put your chicks into their brooder. But until then, let them stay safe and dry and give the other eggs a chance to hatch.
One of the interesting questions I got asked after the summit was, how long should I leave it, an egg in the incubator, after the first egg is hatched? And my point of view is, if you get to day 23 and it's not pipped, then discard the egg. But if you want to be absolutely certain, and you want to be sure that you're not causing any distress, put those eggs in the freezer.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Just to be absolutely certain, you know, no one wants to have, I have heard the odd circumstances where chicks have hatched on day 24 and day 25. It's extremely unlikely, but it's not impossible. So
I think, and I'm not joking here, I had two eggs that didn't pip, and I think I left them in there till day 30, and I'm not kidding.
And actually, there's no wrong thing to do. If you want to be absolutely certain, you can keep them in there for as long as you want. But you also have to be aware that as the days go by, it's less and less likely that the eggs are going to hatch. Right. But it's nothing. You can leave it as there however long you want. But if those eggs haven't got a developed chick, I mean, my advice would be candle them before leaving them in.
Yeah.
Because if they haven't developed, you can discard them straight away.
Right.
If they've developed to the point of chick being in there, leave them as long as you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
But if you want to be certain, put them in a freezer.
I feel like hatching isn't for the faint of heart because, you know, there's so many different things that could go wrong. If you're going to use an incubator, it's different than a broody. If you can use a broody, to me, use a broody.
So easy with a broody.
It's so much easier. It's natural. They do all the work. There's not a lot of this. Like if they have trouble getting out of the shell, mom's going to help them a little bit more. So, you know, the incubator is a good safeguard, but it's not for the faint of heart. I think you have to understand that there are things that can go wrong and you have to understand how to take care of them before they do, because in that moment, you're going to be freaking out.
Yeah. But using a broody as well isn't for the faint of heart, because 36 hours after the first chick has hatched, that broody hen is going to abandon the nest to look for food and water. Doesn't matter if you put food and water right beside them in the nest, they are genetically programmed and instinctually programmed to leave the coop and go outside and search for food and water.
That's a good idea to always have the incubator there for that situation. So
absolutely.
If you wanted to take those eggs and put them in an incubator at that point, then that's a good thing to do.
If your hen hatches, let's say she's sitting on a clutch of 10 and she hatches 7 of them and she's like, I'm done, I'm getting up. And those eggs still, they haven't pipped, they could still go. If you rush them right
but
to
they
the
could still be pipping. They could actually be partway through
already
the pipping process. We've had that a number of times, actually, where the broody hen has left and there's chicks which have literally just got out of the egg. They're absolutely exhausted. They can barely move. They certainly can't stand. They need the broody's heat to properly survive. And she's gone. She's taken her healthy chicks.
Sayonara.
Yeah, that's what she's trying to do. I mean, it's not like us. We have sick relatives. We have sick kids. You know, we would stay behind and make sure they were okay.
Right.
She's thinking about the health of the first hatched, the ones which are the strongest, and she's going to look after them. So my job, as I see it as my job, is I'm going to scoop them up and look after them, because she will take them once they've recovered and had time to gain some strength after the hatch. She takes them. She'll take them back that evening or the following evening. No problem at all. Well, that's the case with broody hens. That's the case with Buff Orpington broody hens anyway. Not every breed and not every hen will do that.
Yeah,
and that's the one caveat. But my Orpingtons do.
Well, Orpingtons are known to be amazing mothers, so that does not surprise me.
Yeah.
I would think probably Cochins and Brahmas would too, because they're just such laid-back girls.
Yeah. And if those hormones are strong enough, they will, 9 times out of 10, I think they will take them. But, you know, every hen is different. They've all got minds of their own, and you can't actually say the hens will definitely do this every single time, because they haven't read the textbooks.
Right.
Well, we don't have
while you're sitting on the nest, here's a book for you to read.
You're gonna read up.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if we could do that?
You know, like what to expect when you're expecting, but the chicken version. What to expect when you're brooding.
When you're expecting.
Oh, there's your pun.
There's a great book idea, isn't it? What to expect when you're broody.
Yes. I like it. Well, I think we should probably, and I know during the chicken summit, this came up in your presentation because you are so thorough and this is crucial. We should probably talk about the elephant in the room or maybe
cockerels. Yeah.
The cockerels in the room. Absolutely. Right.
That was actually before I talked about, are you going to go down the broody hen route or the incubator route? Are you going to breed from your own flock? Are you going to buy fertilized eggs in? The first thing I said is think about your cockerels, think about your roosters, what you're going to do when they hatch. And anyone who's going to use an incubator or broody hen or hatch in any way, shape or form, I know you're big advocates for this too. Please, please, please have a rooster plan because you are going to get roosters.
You're going to get
them. Hens.
They're often going to be more than half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So please know what you're going to do beforehand and do something humane and, you know, find them homes. Don't leave them places. We hear these horror stories over and over again.
Or we get called out to rescue them because somebody's dumped them on the side of the road.
So please.
And that's usually because finding them homes is so hard. So if that's the route you want to go down, have a think about who you know who will take them before you go about the hatching process.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Thinking, I'll sell or give them away afterwards, it is harder than you could possibly imagine.
Yes, yeah, definitely. It really is. You have brought up so many good points for everyone to take an account with getting their incubator, with the incubating process, all these different things. Fiona, you always come to the table with so much great information. Yeah. Thank you.
Buy the best you can afford. And we didn't touch on this right now. I'm sure we'll touch on this in the future. Buy the best quality eggs that you can get.
Absolutely.
Your hands on.
Yeah. And if you can not get them via post, even better. If you
even
can go
better.
And collect them, because any means of transporting them to you is going to risk the air sac inside coming apart from the egg.
Yeah.
And that means that even if your chick develops on the inside, it's not going to hatch.
And have your rooster plan in place. And those are the big things right there.
We probably should have talked about that first, actually, because that's bigger than, you know, choosing your incubator. Because there's no point in buying an incubator if you don't know what to do with the roosters.
Well, we're going to be retalking about all this stuff again. So
the next time we have you on, how about we talk about sourcing your eggs and then the eggs development in the incubator?
Sounds good.
Yeah, great. Lovely.
Okay. That's great.
And
okay.
I'll talk about Puffin and Puffin's chicks over
and
over again. Yeah. Until you're bored.
No, we want to hear everything about Puffin and her babies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you, Fiona. Until next time. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
We just want to thank Fiona one more time. We're so happy to have her back on the show. She's making a great recovery.
Thanks, Fiona.
Thanks, Fiona.
Are you ready to
crack in the eggs?
Crack in those eggs. Now, this week's crack in the eggs is something you can fix for you and your bestie if you're having lunch together.
I like these when it gets hot outside and I don't want to cook so much. Make a batch of this and pop it in the fridge and have lunches for a few days.
It's also great as a hostess dish to take to parties.
Make and take,
Make and take. And, you know, for lunches, it's great to have in the fridge. You can just reheat. You can eat it cold. My mom used to always love cold pasta the day or so after. She said it congealed and was better and it was better cold.
Well, you can also add some chickpeas for more protein or shrimp if you really want to fancy it up.
So let's go through the ingredients. We have a pound of spaghetti or gluten-free spaghetti cooked according to the package, okay? Directions, then drained and rinsed. Now, don't forget, when you're making a salad that's not pasta you're going to eat right away, you need to rinse with cold water. And that wouldn't be a problem in my house. I have plenty of cold water.
You have a lot of cold water. Perfect.
You're going to need 6 hard-boiled eggs, peeled and roughly chopped, 2 cups of broccoli florets, chopped into small pieces. A package of cherry tomatoes, around 10 ounces, sliced in half. A half of a red onion, finely chopped. A half of a red pepper, finely chopped. Optional, if you're allergic or you
like
don't
me.
Want to do nightshades.
Yeah.
A bottle of Italian dressing, or choose your own, or make your own, with olive oil and vinegar and lemon juice. 2 tablespoons of McCormick Salad Supreme seasoning. It makes it yummy.
Yeah, it does.
And 1/4 cup of finely shredded Parmesan cheese, or dairy-free Parm.
You're going to add all of the ingredients except the dressing, seasoning, and optional cheese. Gently mix everything together. Once it's tossed to your liking, you're going to add the last three ingredients, which are the Italian dressing or your own dressing, the Salad Supreme seasoning, and the cheese. Toss it one more time and either serve it as it is or chill it for a few hours.
Make it Jackie style and you chill it.
Yeah.
Because she says it. Also, there's another good salad dressing. I love the Greek vinaigrette. So
that
good
would work
too.
Really well too. You could probably also
add some olives and cucumbers.
I was going to say you could switch the parm to
feta.
Feta. And so, yeah, olives and cucumbers would be really good in there too.
It's really good. Okay. So
it is that easy.
It's that great. Make it. Try it. You might like it. Let us know. Okay. Now it's about the time for retail therapy. Retail therapy.
Yeah.
This week's retail therapy, we are reviewing Eaton Hemp Roost Refresh.
It smells really good and it has a beautiful package.
Oh my gosh. I think about 80% of the story is the packaging.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bag itself is something that when it shows up is completely beautiful, makes you instantly say, wow, this is going to really refresh my coops out there. It smells fantastic.
It's interesting. It's kind of a formula we haven't seen before. So it's kind of a combination of very, very fine hemp shreds
mm-hmm.
and herbs.
Right. And the hemp shreds, I mean, it makes it really fine so that your chickens aren't really going to want to eat that and take that in.
It's, right.
They're really small. So some of the things that are in there, you got lavender, rose petals,
calendula, lemon balm,
basil, all these good things that are going to refresh your roost. Now, we all know that poop happens in the coops. And if this is something that can keep it a little bit fresher for a little bit longer, especially if you're going to, you know, take some of the poop out, you know, and put some of this in.
And you know, I'm not one to use Nestbox herbs, but I did sprinkle this in the Nestbox. And, you know, the girls seem to appreciate it.
They love it. Our friend Nikki over at Purely Chickens is working with Eaton Hemp. And, you know, I wonder if she had something to do with the planning of the bag. The bag is gorgeous.
It's a very pretty bag. It really is.
Go over to Eaton Hemp and check it out. I mean, it is a great product. We love it over here. And it has all the natural ingredients that are going to be safe for your chickens. All their premium. It's a great thing to do. And your chickens are going to thank you for
it. Some of this stuff works as a good insect repellent, too.
It really does.
It has a lot of different applications, not just refreshing your coop, but there's some other power behind some of these things.
And check out the bag because it's really pretty.
I love this bag.
Great job designing the bag, Nikki. You did a great job. Okay. So should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we spotlight one of the main foundation breeds for the world's chickens, the Malay.
Yes, we do.
We're chatting with Tricia Stone Schumacher. We're talking about crossbeak and special needs chickens. And then we're talking about using chickens in therapy. It's a fascinating conversation.
Tricia is amazing.
Cracking the eggs, we're doing a garlic mayo.
Simple and delicious.
Just in time for summer potato salad. Retail therapy. This is interesting. We're doing vintage chicken feed bags.
It's a thing.
And
it's a thing.
Fun.
And it's so much fun. Okay, so what should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens.
Every day and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffee with the chicken ladies. Thanks for listening.